Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people, the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening in the European heartland. I want to thank Dr. James Sanchez for sending this my way. It's for the conclusion by some of the people in the LGBTQ community that if you believe in straight pride, you're a Nazi. I see. Okay. You're a Nazi. If you believe that the proper way to go is healthy heterosexual relations between men and women. If you happen to be heterosexual and proud. Now, you don't feel bad about it. You don't feel down about it. You don't think, geez, I really wish I was gay. Maybe I wish I was transgendered. No. Anyway, where do we get this? That straight pride is makes you a Nazi. Well, there's even a Facebook website out of Boston. Solidarity against hate in Boston. Straight pride is hate pride. Okay. Now, Black pride's good, Native Indian pride's good, gay pride's good, but straight pride is hate. And that's why, you know, we have to be so insistent and not playing their game. I don't care what they say. Anyway, here's a statement. Straight pride parade sounds like a joke, right? This is from a violently homosexual website, Facebook page. Well, it is. But local far-right homophobic and transphobic activists are working to make it a reality in Boston by holding it on August the 31st. Well, that was today. If you happen to be proud of being heterosexual, it means, of course, that you hate homosexuals and you hate transgender people. I don't hate them. I just feel disgusted. More than an absurd joke, this is an attempt to gain legitimacy for a violently homophobic, transphobic, and misogynistic agenda. Notice how all the abuse terms get managed to creep in there. So if you're heterosexual and you like women, if you're a man, you're misogynistic, well, that means you hate women. I mean, this is nutty territory. The organizers have a long track record of bigotry and support of fascist groups. The SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center, designated hate group Mass Resistance, has shown early interest in the event. So if this collection of largely Jewish-backed staffed and founded organization, Southern Poverty Law Center, says it's hate. Well, I guess it must be hate. In August 2017, the people of Boston dealt a body blow to the national alt-right by bringing out thousands of people to tell these fascists, many of them the same people as those organizing the Straight Pride Parade, that we won't have hate in our city. Let's turn out again to show them that however they rebrand, we see through their lies and we'll always come out united against their hate. We will meet in the Boston Public Garden at Arlington Street T-Stop. But anyway, they give further particulars. There will likely be a large police line separating us from the fash. Is it? No, it's that if you're heterosexual and proud, you're a fascist. okay, so that's I guess that's a little take for today. That if you are heterosexual and proud, why? You're a fascist. I guess you might not have known that, but that's the excuse me. That's the latest from the LGBTQ crowd. Here's another interesting one from Dr. James Sanchez. So they are claiming black super geniuses did not build the pyramids. And this is from Taiwan, where perhaps they can be a little less politically correct. Yes. English is actually Chinese, scholars claim. World Civilization Research Association academics also believe all European history began before the 15th century is fake. World Civilization Research Association scholars are claiming that the Western civilization originates from China, and all European languages are merely Mandarin dialects. This is, of course, really nutty stuff. Now, I'm a linguist, and I can assure you that the European languages, the European families of languages, whether they're the Slavic, the Germanic, the Celtic, the Hellenic, are not from China. They all originated in the Aryan heartland, which is now roughly where in the Ukraine. Anyway, World Civilization Research Association Vice President and General Secretary Zai Guiyun said during an interview with Sina online that some English words derive from Mandarin. For example, yellow resembles Mandarin for leaf falling, or yelluo, because of its color of autumn, while heart resembles core, headache. So I concluded this proves English is in fact a dialect of Mandarin. He further claims that after Chinese formed the English language, Russian, French, German, and other European-based languages went through a similar process of synthesization, or maybe more Chinese. The World Civilization Research Association group of scholars are professors from a number of Chinese academic institutions. Association members Zhu Zhuangxi further claim the Western civilization is a sub-civilization of China. Anyway, this is gets nuttier by the second. Well, I get a number of corporate reports, and here's an outfit that of course endlessly caters to blacks. It's Nike, and I would frankly suggest that you not buy their overpriced stuff. But anyway, this is about the Nike Incorporated Board of Directors, and this is taken out of their annual report. Gender diversity, 25%, wow. Gender ethnic diversity, 50% diverse. Age, the average age is 59. Okay, so the other stuff is not interesting. Diversity. Representation of a range of perspectives expands the board's understanding of the needs and viewpoints of our consumers and customers. I think the only really important criterion for a board member is, does the person have experience and skill that can be that will enhance the board? Now, of course, I don't particularly care what Nike chooses to do with its board, but I just find it interesting that they seem to think it's it enhances them to be able to be more diverse. Okay, well, maybe they're more diverse. I'm not sure that. That impresses me at all. Let's see, what do we have here? Oh, yes, that's all the stuff. Let's see. I was having to be in Port Credit, which is where I used to live for in the city of Mississauga. And I saw a very glossy broadsheet handed out or distributed by the local councillor, a fellow named Steve Gasco. And, talking about several historic buildings that are in the ward, and one of them is a factory where 16,000 mostly young women made Sten guns and Lee Enfield rifles by the thousands during World War II. And it goes on to say, an interesting couple little points. Sten guns only needed 47 parts and very little welding. They could be made in 5 hours. An army was soon rearmed. Young girls did it. Well, I'm not sure the young girls are young women, but guns are not much admired today, he says, with good reason. But the 1940s were different times, and the girls who made these weapons were heroes of the Canadian war effort. I don't know. They were doing a job, I guess. This actually was a statement by Alan Skioch, a local historian. So guns are not much admired today, with good reason, really. Yeah, well, one of the reasons is we've become a feminized, wimpified nation, where we blame inanimate objects for the actions of bad people. And the National Rifle Association has a long time had a slogan, which is quite sensible. Guns don't kill people. People kill people. Guns are an inanimate object, just like a knife or a hammer. However, in the rush to government control and in the flight from personal responsibility, governments and evil people who wish to concentrate power have certainly pushed gun control in a big way. Well, farther down on this councillor's broadsheet, and this is councillor Steve Gasco, there's quite a little piece about keep your family and pets safe from coyotes. Yeah, or as they say out west, coyotes. Now, where do these coyotes come from? Well, they come down. Well, there are a number of river valleys that go through that area, including the Credit River, and the coyotes are very clever at that. They can sort of coexist with humans. They're shy, but they can come quite close, and they're quite adept at finding food. Well, here's the giving some elaborate suggestions about about keeping your family safe and what you might do if you meet a coyote if you're out walking and so on. And this is, I find, quite pathetic. When walking in areas where coyotes are active, bring protection such as a phone. I'm going to beat you down with a phone. Personal alarm. Umbrella. Walking stick or flashlight. You'll perhaps forgive my cynicism, but how do you know wherewith coyotes are present. But okay, where a coyote might be present. So what you should do is bring a cell phone. A call for help. Please come and help me. A personal alarm. An umbrella. A walking stick. You know what they don't say to bring? Bring a handgun. Oh, we said you probably couldn't legally carry one in Canada. You see, and that's the problem. Now, I'm not suggesting people go around and try to kill coyotes. I don't like the idea. And probably in real life, most coyotes would want to keep away from human beings, or we're not get close. I think this is largely a non-issue. But I found it interesting that among the bright suggestions is that you could bring a flashlight or a cell phone. whatever happened to the good old rough and ready right of a person to take reasonable precautions, which might, not necessarily, but might involve bringing a handgun if you're going to be out late at night or in iffy circumstances? Why not? In the broken, wimpified state that we find ourselves in today, I suppose the ideal thing would be for you to, call the police. Yeah, but they don't probably not want to help you. But we're too busy. We're not good. We'll just go home. Something like that. Here's a very interesting piece from Steve Bergen from the Patriotic Network News in the States. Do you support ending birthright citizenship? And birthright citizenship is something that most nations do not have. Unfortunately, the United States and Canada do. So what it means is, if you manage to fly into the United States and drop a kid, that child becomes has citizenship by birth in the United States. That should not be the case, because that can be and is wildly misused in Canada and the United States by people mostly from the Orient for the purposes of kind of getting a foot in the door or base. The child may very well grow up elsewhere, perhaps in China, perhaps in Hong Kong. However, when the child becomes an adult, is 18, the child has every right to go to the United States and, as an American citizen, sponsor the rest of the family. So, anyway, the Patriotic Network News has put this out. Dear fellow American, as the country is politically divided, we are fighting to protect our own freedoms from being taken away by fellow Americans. We are also being threatened by non-Americans. This country is being flooded with illegal immigrants who are draining our system of the benefits meant to help citizens of this country. Our tax dollars are being used to help illegal immigrants who do not contribute to this great country. Simply protecting our borders isn't enough to fight this plague that's affecting each and every one of us. President Trump is ready to sign an executive order to eliminate birthright citizenship to help fight this battle and protect the American way of life. Do you support this executive order? Are you worried what will happen to this country if we don't do something now? Your urge to make your voice heard. I would urge you to contact your United States Senator or Congressman or both, and let them know that you support this. Well, there's going to be a protest on Labor Day in Toronto. This is the notice put out by for it. Just want to remind you that we are planning a drag kids protest in front of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation Toronto headquarters on Labor Day Monday, September the 2nd. It goes from 12:30 to 2 p.m. And they give the location. It's the CBC's headquarters is at 250 Front Street West. And the reasons for this are the following. In spite of our concerns over Canadian Broadcasting Corporation's promotion and glamorization of the use of children as homoerotic sex objects, there's been no investigation or formal review of drag kids thus far. There's been no genuine apology or retraction, just passing the buck and platitudes. In fact, drag kids continues to be publicly available on the CBC Docs POV website, along with one-sided articles that seek to convince people that child drag is perfectly healthy and normal. Let's be quite clear. Drag means usually males dressing up as females. And there's a whole entertainment subculture, certain bars and so on, where usually heterosexual men, so not always, sometimes they're homosexual, but usually heterosexual men who have a particular kink dress up very elaborately as women, complete with lipstick, well-coiffed hair, usually high heels, stockings, and bust-enhancing paraphernalia to give them a cleavage and so on. Frankly, I think it's freaky and sick. But there's a subculture within that, and that is dressing up children, dressing up little boys as girls. Now, that is perverse. Anyway, CBC Ombudsman Jack Nagler, who is supposed to provide oversight and accountability, has really done nothing at all. Here are some of the responses he's offered us in terms of journalism. Drag Kids adheres to CBC standards. I've shared your email with the program as responsible. Regarding the upcoming broadcast of the Drag Kids documentary on CBC Docs, that's documentaries, there are almost no circumstances in which I would intervene before the air date, says the Ombudsman. So we'll intervene afterwards. CBC Senior Director Sandra Kleinfeld, I wonder if she is Irish, who is responsible for airing Drag Kids, claims that Drag Kids is suitable viewing for all ages. This is outrageous. I believe nothing short of a public demonstration will draw attention to the need for an investigation and perhaps even criminal charges against the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. Our children are worth defending. You can indicate your interest in attending the protest, and there's a Facebook connection, and this is David Cook from the entire Citizens Go team. And this was a letter that he wrote to the Ms. Kleinfeld, who is the senior director responsible for airing Drag Kids. Dear Ms. Kleinfeld, sexualization is being defined as occurring when a person's value comes only from his or her sexual appeal or behavior, to the exclusion of other characteristics. And when a person is sexually objectified, that is made into a thing for another sexual use. This is an apt description of the children featured in Drag Kids, who perform for the erotic pleasure and approval of adults. Studies have shown that early sexualization has been linked to the following. Poor cognitive performance, and that's they cite the academic study. Eating disorders, and they cite another academic study. Low self-esteem, and they cite a third academic study, and depression. A recent study focuses on the effects of sexualized images on math performance of children 8 to 10 years old, and the writer provides a link to that. A recent book explores the extent to which the premature introduction of sexuality into their lives can place children at risk of unwanted attention. Yes, little boy dressed up as a little girl immediately sends sexual signals to sexually depraved males. Finally, convicted pedophile and pedophile rights activist Tom O'Carroll, who campaigned for sex with children to be legalized, argues in favor of child drag queens. And this is what the convicted pedophile and pedophile rights activist Tom O'Carroll says. Let's face it, when a pretty young boy tells the world he is gay and dances sensuously in front of grown men wearing vampish dresses and makeup, when she strips off items of clothing or goes on stage scantily clad right from the off, when dollar bills are accepted as tips from an audience apparently wild with excitement, when all this is going on, we're getting far more than just a celebration of gender diversity or an innocent display of precocious performance talent. Being a drag queen, or a drag princess, if you will, puts it right out there in the open for all to see. It says loud and proud, I'm a sexy kid with sexy feelings. It's totally cool for grown-ups to get turned on by me. Well, I mean, how much more do you need? And the writer of this complaint to the CBC, who's organizing the protest, David Cook, goes on. However, the CBC's educational mandate is, quote, to create shows that are not only age appropriate, but also actively promote healthy child development in all areas, cognitive, social, creative, emotional, and physical. Could you please explain, he asks the woman in charge of airing this show, could you please explain in detail how promoting early sexualization and objectification of children, which is linked to poor cognitive performance, eating disorders, low self-esteem, and depression, promotes healthy child development? Could you also please explain how placing children at risk of unwanted attention and finding favor with those who would sexually exploit children promotes healthy child development? If you are unable to offer an explanation, then what steps will you take to redress the wrongs that you are committing against Canadian children? As a Canadian citizen who pays taxes that support the CBC, I look forward to your response. As one who regards children as people to be treasured rather than as things to be used, I'm eager to hear back from you. So that's what this protest is going to be about. That will be on Monday from 12:30 until 2 o'clock outside the CBC headquarters in downtown Toronto, to 250 King Street West. And I urge, if you are in the Toronto area, come on out and join the protest. I'll be there, and a number of the members of our circle will be there, and hope to see you. Okay, now, here's a very interesting report by two scholars who have done some great reports. They did a great report back in 2011 and have updated this report. Yeah, this is a former Reform member of Parliament, Herb Grubel, who is a professor emeritus of economics at Simon Fraser University in Vancouver, British Columbia, and his research associate, Patrick Grady. And their groundbreaking report back in 2011, which did not get nearly the attention it deserved, determined that the cohort, almost entirely of third world immigrants, that had come to Canada between 1985 2005 and 2010, and now they've updated that to the present time, those that came in, I guess, as of up to the end of last year. However, what they determined was that this cohort of immigrants was a considerable drain on Canada. In fact, it was a major drain on Canada. And their methodology was rather simple. What they did was they looked at what these immigrants contributed to the tax base. In other words, okay, well, what did they put in? And this would be taxes at all levels. This would be federal income tax, provincial sales tax, property tax, if they own property, etc. So like, one side of the equation is, what did they put in? Okay. The other side of the equation is, well, what did they take out in services? And it was really quite amazing. They took between $17 and $23 billion more than they put in. So the slogan that you will hear quite often, we need immigration to grow the economy, turns out to be not just misleading, but utterly false. What do you mean, grow the economy? The immigration we've been getting is draining the economy. In fact, without those immigration numbers, Canada would be substantially better off. Now, that is precisely the opposite of what you're told. And this is part and parcel of the relentless propaganda that is foisted on Canadians. Propaganda, you know, we're not supposed to, well, actually, that is very seldom challenged, but should be challenged, because it isn't just misleading, it's wrong. Well, anyway, they have done an update on this, and in a letter to the National Post earlier in the year, and I think it was the Vancouver Sun, actually, Herb Grubel said that the current cost was more in the neighborhood of about $40 billion a year, because there are more there's been more immigrants since they did their study 8 years ago. Canada's immigration ministry should start behaving like a human relations department, not an open invitation dinner party. William Watson says, now we know how well Trudeau's Syrian refugees are doing. It's not good. Jack Mintz, actually, evidence shows diversity makes countries weaker, not stronger. In a recent campaign speech, Maxime Bernier, leader of the People's Canada Party, cited the results of one of our studies, which showed that recent immigrants are imposing a heavy fiscal burden on Canadians. He used this information to justify his plan to reduce future levels of immigration. The CBC had journalist Jonathan Gatehouse do a fact check on Bernier's claims about the fiscal burden. In a publication sponsored by the CBC, he concludes that this claim is false. Since this verdict implies that our study also reached false conclusions, we feel compelled to do our own fact check on the analysis produced by Gatehouse. The author makes much of the well-known fact that immigrants have a positive effect on aggregate national income, or gross domestic product, which says nothing about the fiscal burden. He also fails to note that recent immigrants have lowered Canada's per capita income since, according to official statistics, they have lower average incomes than other Canadians, for many reasons, one of them being that often they are much less skilled. In some cases, much less motivated to work, but not all cases. He also cites a number of published studies and data he considers relevant. They involve well-known facts and again tell us nothing about the fiscal burden. For example, he notes that the gap in the unemployment rate between recent immigrants and native-born Canadian males has narrowed, but neglects to mention that this always happens when an economic boom creates increased demand for labor and leads to the hiring of previously unemployable workers. Another statistic Gatehouse cited is that wages received by immigrants who've entered the workforce in 2017 were the highest ever. These wages have indeed been increasing every year, along with the wages of all new labor force entrants. So, in other words, it's not a fact really of any consequence. The fact that the average incomes of the immigrants who arrived in 2006 increased consistently over the following 10 years simply reflects the normal increase in incomes of all workers through time due to increased skills and work experience. As working immigrants go through this cycle, their average income rises relative to the average income of Canadians of all ages. Estimating the fiscal burden immigrants impose on Canadians requires data on the average taxes paid and government benefits received by immigrants. Data from the 2016 census, also cited by Gatehouse, shows that the average income of recent immigrants aged 25 to 54 continues to fall short of that of non-immigrants, which means they continue to pay less taxes on the average. Of course, I mean, that's just obvious. With progressive income tax, the less you make, the less you pay. So if you're a low-wage earner, naturally, you're going to pay less. And if you have a larger-than-average family, you'll pay even less. Why? Because, well, children are, and rightly so, a deduction. So low-wage immigrants with somewhat larger families than the average Canadian will end up paying even lower taxes, and in other words, will contribute even less to the tax base. That should be obvious. These are my comments, not Professor Grubel's. But Professor Grubel continues. In the most recent study, we used basic statistics from the previous census and the National Household Survey to estimate because of Canada's progressive income tax system, recent immigrants paid much lower income tax than non-immigrants. We added to this amount other taxes related to income and wealth, such as the GST, that's the Goods and Services Tax, and capital gains taxes, and concluded that in 2008-2009, recent immigrants on average paid $13,100 in taxes compared to $18,000 paid by other Canadians, that's on average, yielding a shortfall of nearly $5,000 a year, or $4,900 to be exact. The government publishes a statistics on how much it spends to provide different types of benefits. In the absence of all the required information, we assume that immigrants receive the same benefits on average as did other Canadians. This assumption seems reasonable, since nearly all spending was on universal health care, social insurance, education, security, and conservation of the environment. In response to criticism, we estimated that with their lower incomes, immigrants benefited less from government spending on protection, but because they have more children on average, benefited more from spending on education. The net effect of these adjustments is that immigrants on average received $414 more than non-immigrants in benefits. Gatehouse noted that in our study, we had not taken into account account of welfare and other social benefits received by immigrants, which some believe to be excessive and others believe to be less than what non-immigrants receive. We deliberately avoided this controversial issue and assumed simply that both groups received the same average amount of such benefits. The greatest differences between recent immigrants and others is on the tax, not the spending side of the government accounts. When we combined our estimates of taxes paid and benefits received, we found that the average recent immigrant in Canada imposes a fiscal burden of $5,300 a year. That's a pretty big burden. You know, they're taking more from the tax base than they're putting in, to the tune of $5,300. According to the government statistics, in 2010, the number of recent immigrants since 1985 was about 3.7 million. Multiplying this number by 5,300 brings the estimated fiscal burden that year to $20 billion. That was in 2010. Since then, the stock of immigrants has increased by 250,000 a year and raised the annual fiscal burden in 2018 to over $30 billion. The immigration is a loser for the Canadian taxpayer. A big loser. $30 billion. Canada needs a full discussion of its immigration policy that considers both its benefits, which are discussed by politicians and the media all the time, but also the very real costs, which involve not just the fiscal burden, but also traffic congestion, overcrowding of hospitals, schools, and recreational facilities, deteriorating environment, and lack of affordable housing, which governments cannot address in part because of the fiscal burden. A lot of roads, affordable housing, and cleaner environment could be purchased with $30 billion. I want to read that again. A lot of roads, affordable housing, and cleaner environment could be purchased with that $30 billion. And it's very much to his credit that Maxime Bernier, the leader of the People's Party of Canada, is bringing this up and getting these economic insights, a much wider audience. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side. Are you going to take a musical break now? And kind of change the pace a little bit with the man who brought the music of Central California, the Bakersfield sound, put that on the national radar, particularly through the popular TV show Hee Haw, on which he was a feature for many years. This is the man from Bakersfield, Buck Owens and the Buckaroos. This is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me here on White Resistance Radio.
Oh, the sun's gonna shine in my life once more. Love's gonna lift here again. Things are gonna be the way they were before. Thank you. heart skips a beat when we walk down the street. I feel trembling in my knees, and just to know your mind till the end of time makes my heart skip a beat. Well, I did a double take the day I met you. My heart dream come true, and my heart skips a beat when we walk down the street. I feel trembling in my knees, and just to know your mind till the end of time makes my heart skip a together again. My tears have stopped falling. The long, lonely nights are now at an end. The key to my heart you hold in your hand, and nothing else matters. We're together again.
Oh, goodness, we lost that. Thank you.
That's a few songs by the man from Bakersfield, but the late Buck Owens. This is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm. And you're on the fighting side of me.
From Britain's shore, Wolfe, the dauntless hero, came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together. The thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot, and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home. The maple leaf forever, the maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever.